How's it going, everyone? Welcome to Free Kick, the official AFLW fantasy podcast, as we do our end of season review. Round 10 has wrapped up, and despite the fact that we've now been doing this for 40 something or so episodes this season, that took us three goes to get this actual podcast started because we are very uncoordinated.
It wasn't my fault.
But we've got the whole gang here. How are you going, guys?
I'm going very well. I want listeners to hit me up on Twitter and who they think was the culprit for us taking so long to get going.
Well, let's start with Will. How was your weekend?
Yeah, my weekend was good. Unfortunately, my Cats couldn't quite get over the line against Adelaide to sneak into the finals, which would have been outrageous because it would have required Collingwood beating Melbourne anyway. But still, very enjoyable season regardless, and looking forward to the finals.
Yes, me too. Liam, are you looking forward to the finals?
I am looking forward to the finals. Got to see a couple of games on the weekend. Watched the Bombers pretty handedly deal with Carlton, and then watched the game at Punt Road, which was a really, really cracking match. The thing that's really soured my weekend is knowing that the Bombers have no chance in the finals, kind of either this week or long term, because we are missing our two of our three most important players. Bonnie Toogood going down with a level two syndesmosis injury means she's out for the final series.
Yeah. So poor thing.
We are completely dry, dead in the water, like dead on arrival. There's no chance for us going up against any team in the finals, basically.
Frio.
We might have had a chance against Port Adelaide, but then we'll talk about that end of game situation.
Yeah, that's pretty bittersweet for the Bombers. Like, made it into finals, but poor Bonnie. Like, just what a way to end the season.
They've basically been up against it pretty much all season, the Bombers, and they've just found a way every single time. And yeah, as you say, Liam, this might just be a bridge too far, but you'll take the finals entry regardless.
No,
hopefully. Well, I would as a Geelong supporter, so I'm the only person here who doesn't have a team in the finals.
Yeah,
which is why we're again going to avoid Jono and say, Mel, how was your weekend?
Oh, I can't let that stand. Will, you don't mind missing finals because your team has made and won finals. The Bombers haven't done it in 20 years. Sorry. End of peace. Mel, how was your weekend?
I've only been around for 10 in the women's. Actually, no less than that. Cut yourself some slack.
Made and won finals.
Don't let your men's angst cloud your women's excitement.
Yeah, let the women start their own curse of losing finals.
Exactly. They're like losing on their own right.
They're about to start on a two-year streak, according to Liam. So.
Look, I'm excited. Flag Mantle is back as an option. I don't think they're going to get very far. I'm very, very proud of Freo for making it this far, to be honest. To get into the finals with two of your top players out and then one, the third, kind of going out during the season, I'll take where we are. I did not get to any games, unfortunately, this weekend. I've been very busy with some other life admin, but I did check my fantasy score and I definitely sat down and watched that Freo game to end the season. And boy, whew, was that stressful having three of my players in it and really wanting Freo to win. So yeah, it was a way to go out for the season, but I'm pretty sad that fantasy's over because I've really enjoyed it. What about you, Jono?
Yeah, I mean, Loveland and the Hawks have made finals. We've locked in top two, home final. It's going to be very exciting this weekend. We're locked in the McLellan Trophy. It's a good time to be a Hawks supporter. It feels a little bit surreal to say, but I actually feel like we've got a shot against the Lions this weekend, which is exciting. I wouldn't have thought that, 10, 11 weeks ago.
I don't think anyone would have. That's pretty impressive. Let's move on to some sadder news then. Let's look at the final shipping report, and as usual, we'll start off with the lowest round performance. So straight back to you, Jono.
Oh, wonderful. I've gone from bottom to top to bottom again.
I can't let you be too happy.
You can just wipe away your tears with $100 bills from the McLellan Trophy, and I'm sure you'll have a terrible time.
So this final round didn't go too well. I scored a 1,241, which slid me down to 1,560th overall. To be honest, I wasn't too disappointed by anyone's scores. I just didn't really have anyone do well, if that makes sense. I had a lot of middling performances, which was a little bit strange. I'd say my best call of the week was taking on the Marinoff VC. I traded into Ash McCarthy for a 112, who I took as captain. So I was actually pretty happy with that.
Mm-hmm.
The bad call was not this week, but the week before, trading out of Eilish O'Dowd. And I think that she's gone 290s after that. 290s. And I've gone a 70 and a 69 with Talia Hickey. So just a little bit disappointing there. What blindsided me this weekend, though, was how high Mimstrom's ceiling is. Like, the 130s, I could believe, that was the most dominant performance on the weekend. That was unbelievable what she was doing against the Bulldogs.
Yeah.
I can't imagine what it must have been like, in that being the final game, if you were at or around the 100 mark. Or, as we'll talk about, first and second, having a look at, like, having to sit there and watch Mimstrom just either dominate and pull you up the ranks and see if you can get to where you want to, or sitting there knowing that you've taken a Marinoff VC, assuming that, like, Mimstrom's ceiling is 130. Like, that's a reasonable expectation. Wrong.
Did you end up trading her out and enjoying the extra cash that you could have got with that?
No, I didn't. I captained her and I left you all in my wake. You
captained her?
Yep.
Oh, that's nice. Well, that, I mean, that kind of leads into, oh no, we'll go Will.
Woo. Yeah, my season ended fairly unceremoniously, much like how it started. I scored 12.53, which put me back a grand total of 2 ranking spots.
Nice.
To finish at
consistent.
Catastrophic drop, especially when you're ranked 3,513th overall. Look, I didn't have much to say in terms of good calls this week. I straight captained Marinoff. I traded into someone who didn't score very well. So basically, my good call for the week is making Liam's bad call more entertaining, which we'll get to in a moment. But my bad call was basically I did 2 downgrades and an upgrade, and my upgrade was into Isla Sheeran, who I picked up against my own advice after last week saying I think she'll underperform given they're playing a team that's pretty good, and I was right, and got a 55 in my back line, which was about what my season deserved, really. So
why did you do that?
I just really like Isla Sheeran. I think she's a wonderful person and a wonderful player, so... Yeah.
The most Will statement ever.
And my blind side was actually Noffy only scoring 108. It was her first score under 130. Under 120, rather, for since the start of the season. She's literally scored over 120 every week. So I think 120, and we've hinted on it with Mimstrom, a lot of people would have just been thinking, oh, yeah, just put the C on Noffy. Obviously, the better amongst us put the VC on her. But yeah, only 108 Noffy, which was a down end to arguably the greatest all-time fantasy season, funnily enough.
Yeah, it was the free kicks against that really killed her. She had 6 frees against and only 10 tackles. So
yeah, and she was on. She had a 50-point third quarter to get her up to 99, and then scored 7 points. Sorry, 9 points in the. In the final quarter, I was fully expecting her to just keep going and score, you know, 120.
Yeah.
Didn't happen. Geelong basically owned the ball in the last quarter.
It kind of does check out, though, because if we look at last season, she had by far her lowest score. I think it was by far her lowest score. But essentially, she ended the season with a low one. Oh, yeah, 99, where her other low score was 91. So a low round 10, and then came back firing in the 2 finals games. So it's not kind of surprising that her lowest score for the season is round 10. I would expect her to come back in full energy the next couple of games.
One thing is that game last year, Hatchard missed. They were all a bunch of players like rested for Adelaide, and they went and watched Erin Phillips play her last game. And so playing against West Coast, she got heavily tagged. This game, it was freeze against, and I would have said 5 of them were for tackles. So those are, you know, the biggest point swings that we see. They're the dreaded -7. I reckon that's 25 points or 30, nearly 30 points that she lost from those frees against. And that's what really killed her in this game.
Well, slightly above Will this week, coming in at a 1258.
Drats.
Is me. Though my score went down again, and further than Jono, which is disappointing. I was really hoping I could make it back up, but no, alas. Part of the reason why is because I didn't loophole, even though I wanted to. I just kind of forgot about it. So season 10 next season is the season I'm going to be technically now competent.
That's the most Mel statement.
Yes. So my good call for this week, though, was that I've been bringing in some big names in the last couple of weeks. So we had Strom in last week and I brought in Garner this week. So pretty happy with that. So that's a, what was that, 131 and 166. The bad call is that in order to be doing this, I kind of messed up post double rounds with my trading strategy of up and down. And I've just been doing a lot of sideways and some pretty bad down. So I had too many very low scores from non-fantasy relevant players on my field, which kind of countered those nice big scores. So that's definitely been my demise this last couple of rounds. But yeah, my blind side was, I mean, I don't really have a good one to put in addition to Mimstrom's ceiling and surprising to see Noffy be quieter in the game. Liam, you have the only person to go up this week. And one of us that's really championing actually doing well at fantasy. How did you go?
Thank you. I did all right. Had a 1459. So that had me at a round rank of 198 and an overall rank of 269. So I finish up 112 from last week. My good call were my trades. So I had to get rid of Daisy Darcy and Sinead Goldrick. And I was also very keen to get rid of Zali Goldsworthy. Now, in the end, Zali Goldsworthy was fine and not, you know, the worst player on the ground. That's right. She scored a 97. But I managed to nab one of the highest scorers of the round. So I did manage to trade in Beck Beeson as my upgrade for her massive 135, 133. I can't remember exactly what it was. And I also managed to nab a pretty solid downgrade sideways from Sinead Goldrick with Maggie Gorham for a really excellent matchup where she scored a 72, so well outperformed her price that and her average. So I was happy with those. Will's got his hand up, and I just don't know if it's going to be about the other trade that I could have made or Beck Beeson.
It's about Beck Beeson. I've been championing Beck Beeson for about 3 years, so to see it come good in the final round of this season to get you up into the top 300, I'm pretty happy for Beck and for yourself, Liam, and I'm also very happy for the next bad call.
Yes, I will just say as well, Beck Beeson is one where it was like the best that I could get to, where I'm like, yeah, that feels pretty good. Like, she's got a great matchup. I was not expecting 130. If I'd had the cash, I would have taken Elise Parker every day of the week, and I would have been 50 points down. My bad call. Now, I didn't actually have that many bad ones this week because I captained Mimstrom and that turned out to go amazingly as well. But I was having a look at, like, you know, who was the best player I could have traded in that I could have afforded, because my other trade was Daisy Darcy down to Maeve Chaplin. Now, Maeve Chaplin scored a 53. She was just fine. Ball didn't live in the defense as much as I would have liked. And there was just a couple of times where she got caught on the bench when the ball was down there. And I did have a look at one of the best players I could have traded in. And I think the highest scoring player for the week was Tamara Smith, which is very funny that is how my season ends, given we started right before week one with my shock and outrage. You will hear much more about Tamara Smith tonight, let me tell you.
Really full circle. What a way to cap it off. And talking about Tamara Smith.
Oh, actually, just before blind side. This is becoming, it's going to become a bit of a GWS and Tamara Smith episode today. My blind side is it's not fantasy related whatsoever. It's the free kick against GWS in the final minute against Port. That is the worst free kick you'll see all year, because from that, Maria Maloney kicks it to Gemma Horton. Gemma Horton kicks a goal and they win. Port would then have finished eighth. Bombers finished seventh, playing against Richmond, changed a whole bunch of finals things. It is also just the... Will is now reminding me in the run sheet that it was Kirsty Lamb. My apologies. It is the worst free kick that I've ever seen. I don't know how it was that it was given. It was a tackle, completely legal, holding the ball, just drops it. There was no sling, there was no dump, and I hate everything about it.
Spicy time to be giving away like a potentially iffy free kick. Like you'd think, given the importance of this moment, maybe I'll err on the side of caution and not award it. But
I don't even think it was iffy. I literally don't understand how they've given it. The head, like you could say at the beginning, or maybe it's like a bit of a sling and her head kind of gets close to the ground. No, not even close. Just horrific. Blindside completely. I don't know how it was given.
I appreciate that the free kick wasn't there, but it did lead to a very, very exciting finish. I mean, that was a hell of a mark by Gemma Houghton and a great clutch goal. For the mistake to have happened in any game, I'm glad that it happened in one with almost no stakes. It just slightly changed the finals order. It didn't affect where GWS finished.
If that had happened in the
Essendon Carlton one and Essendon had missed finals due to something like that, we would be talking about this with a lot more importance.
Like, I know, but like also it's not important. Like there are two completely different finals this week as a result of that call.
Yeah.
I agree. Great kick from Gemma Houghton, and I'm sure everyone from Port got to bask in that moment. And I don't mean to take that away from them. I can appreciate that. I was just sitting there fuming. Like, this shouldn't be happening.
Would you now like to talk about Tamara Smith some more now that you've moved on for your other favourite topic, GWS?
Yes, we can talk about the Tamara Smith of it all. My apologies, everyone. I forgot to make the trades this week. It was a terrible round. 1-1-3-9. Had three zeros or near zeros. So Matilda Schultz and Daisy Darcy were both in the squad. They were both zeros. And then Bonnie Toogood's four. That was going to make it really tough. So a final rank of 936. So after a reign of terror for the rest of us, it finally did nearly drop outside the 1,000.
Does make me feel good to finish about 700 spots behind a team that's had no love for 3 weeks in a row. Wow.
And it was getting the world's most minimal out of love before then. It was like that plant that you're always shocked when it's alive when you come back from a long weekend away.
The lesson here is make a really good starting squad and then don't touch it and you'll be fine.
Speaking of good starting squads.
Yes, who's running us through our watch and wait scoreboard?
It's Wills. It's the WWNW.
www.watchandwaitscoreboard.com. Yes, the watch and wait scoreboard, possibly the most important one for the entire year because this is the winning scoreboard. And we've talked a bit about exciting finishes and we had an exciting finish in the overall rankings, which was quite interesting because Carl W and his team, so the Supreme team, has pinched the win over Brett W by 9 points. Oof. Brett W had been in the lead for the last, would have been 3 weeks, I think it had been.
And might have even been for longer than that. It might have even
might
been
have even been longer, about a month. But the Supreme team had a weekly rank of 8th overall with 1566 to sneak ahead by those 9 points, 16,495 points overall. Damn. Congratulations, Carl. What a come-from-behind win.
Yeah. Comes down in part due to Ebony Marinoff, and I don't believe that Supreme team had Ashley Maloney either. That was another huge blindside for me. Just really, they both had Ashley Maloney. Supreme team didn't have Bonnie Toogood. That's what saved them.
Mm.
Ashley Maloney's 26. Will and I were facing off in a spreadsheet keeper league that we do. And I had Ashling Maloney, and I knew it was a bad matchup. I was expecting a 450. Like, it's a relatively deep league. There's not a lot of forwards that you can really rely on. 26 really was tough.
And the lucky thing for Liam was the rest of my team did average. So he ended up winning that quite easily.
You did have also as the same player as Carl's Supreme team, Beck Beeson, 132, sitting at M4. That's a pretty spectacular exclamation point to go alongside Mim Strom as their captain.
And And I did also have Marinoff, who I realised her scoring 150 every week was carrying me for most of the season. But speaking of top scorers, the top score for the week was the aptly named Team Awesome, who took out the final weekly high score with 16,000. And 16,000, that would be interesting. 1,622. So congratulations to Lockie for breaking the game and scoring 16,000 points in 1 week. but yeah, 16,622, another massive score. Very good effort. In terms of the top 100 overall rank in the weekly score, this was quite an interesting one we talked about. There were actually three coaches tied on 15,663. Which was Ben, Jack, and Michael. And to break this tie, it was broken on the highest weekly score in a singular round.
Jeez.
Which I believe meant that Michael's demerit points has managed to come overall 100th.
And so I have the numbers here. So 102nd was Goody is Just Too Good. And they had a 2,151 in week 7. I've not bothered to look at the other weeks. I assume everyone's just going to have the higher score in week 7. Berry Machine had a 2,262. And it was Demerit Points who had a 2,288. So that was a weak rank of 189. And that was what got them the 100th.
So pretty impressive there. The score needed to match that top 100 and could have got you in that three-way tie was 1,397 points, which Mel, myself, and Jono didn't even get close to, but Liam managed to pass, which was great. In terms of the free kick update, this is a bit of a weird one as well because we do have some of those tied players.
We have all of them.
41 coaches. We have all of them, in fact. There you go. 41 coaches inside the top 100. We do therefore have, you know, a little bit of leeway to claim a couple of extra ones, which is great.
I think it's 41 under 100 because we have 100, 101, and 102. Yeah. So it's either 42 or 44.
40, I'm going to claim the 44 because it sounds better.
That's what I was hoping for.
It's going to be the unluckiest 101st and 102nd player ever.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, to miss out, if you were tied and finished, 101st, you'd be like, oh, bugger, that's a bit of a shame. But to also do it and then finish 102nd, that's a stitch up. And I believe that was Ben. Bad luck, mate. That's almost more notable than finishing 100th, except you don't get a hat. So bad luck. So congratulations to all of the winners in the competition. Congratulations once again to Carl for pinching that win.
So this time last year, we had an interview with Briny, who finished first overall. Now, we're in the process of trying to get in contact with the coach of the Supreme Teams, Carl W. Unfortunately, we haven't managed to lock in an interview with them before recording this episode, but as and when we record it, we will put it up on our feed on both the official and the free kick feed. So you will be able to hear at some point, hopefully, from the first overall coach and hopefully get to steal their wisdom to try and win next year. I know that's what I'm going to be trying to, anyway.
Yes, I'm definitely looking forward to some advice on what to actually do in fantasy because I'm losing confidence that we know. On to the hot topics for this week. We're going to do the Player Season Awards. So this was a lot of fun last year. Going to run through some awards that we give to the players and we'll also chuck up a bit of a poll later on Insta and then our host season awards as well, where we reflect on what we did well and not. So starting off with the Kiara Bowers Award for the AFLW Fantasy Best and Highest, the highest fantasy scorer for the season, it has to be Ebony Marinoff. There's actually no voting required here. Noffy takes the win. And in exciting news for the AFLW, they now need to update their stats page because it still has Kiara Bowers as the highest ever score in AFLW Fantasy with her 184.
Yeah, and when we put up the polls, because for all the rest of ones, we're all going to put up our nominations, but we'll put one up here to say, who do you reckon came second in the BNH? Because if you, as good as some of the other players were this season, I think an average of 145 or whatever it was from Knopf is just ridiculous. The best fantasy season, men's or women's, ever in terms of average. So what an amazing effort by Ebony Marinoff.
So I was just having a look at some Ebony Marinoff stats before this. Her highest score last season was 174. This season she did that She beat that twice with a 177 and a 191, which took out the highest fantasy score for any player, topping Bowers. So that's exciting. Very interested to see how that plays when Bowers comes back next season. But so not only has she increased her maximum by heaps, but she's been lifting her minimum as well. So her low for this season was 107 she got in round 10. Her low for 2023 was a 91 that she had, I think, round 4 or so early in the season. So her lowest score for the season is also 16 points higher than it was. And yeah, we already mentioned how she's finished the season a little bit quieter, but she backed that up with two big finals games last season. So hopefully she pulls that through.
So the one thing I wanted to say before we move off Noffy, I have the opinion that the game that she had against the Suns, where she scored that 91, is the reason she's scoring so well this year. Because Lucy Single and Cam Joyce together decided they'd tag Ebony Marin off and not tag Anne Hatchard. Anne Hatchard destroyed, completely ruined that game and became the player that requires more attention. The other thing that I think really impacted it is Noffy looked gassed when she was being tagged by Lucy Single. And one thing that I have noticed more from Ebony Marinoff this year is that her ability to get from stoppage to stoppage, which was already good, but she went up against Lucy Single, who was a former like under 17s, under 19s rugby player or touch rugby player or something like that, and an elite runner, elite tagger, saw that. And I can't confirm this, but I would like to think that that impacted her improvement this year. So that game, that lowest score last year, is why we have the best season of all time, is my quiet moments of history take.
Yeah, I like it. I just love comparing Bowers and Noffy. I think my team might have to be Noffy down to me next season because she's just too good.
Bowers down to Noff? Had enough of Bowersing down?
So many options. Like, just the one that really put this in perspective for me, right? Like, Bowers had a huge season 7. She kind of slowed down a little bit in season 8, but her season 7 average was 121. And that was largely dragged up by the 184 that she had in the round 10. Noffy beat or equaled that every single game this season except round 10. So she started on 121, which was her second lowest score, which was the Bowser's average from before. And she's just taken that to a whole nother level in every other game except round 10. Mm-hmm.
The thing that really is going to sour this whole experience is, Mel, you would have been able to do that whole spiel. If we just got the non-free kick affected score this week, it could have been every single game this season she was better, except this week.
It would have been a really strong stat, yeah. I really had to quieten on that bit because it was like, oh, there's an exception. But yeah, so, I mean, exception included, huge season. And I did my little Noffy spiel there because we didn't have any other nominees. Don't worry, I won't be ranting on about every player for the awards. Because our next award is the, oh, what was it called before?
It was the Rose Sparkus. It was the Rose Sparkus Award.
Yeah, notes now say Charlie Rowbottom / Georgie Sparkus. I was like, that's not fun enough. The Rose Sparkus Award for the best rookie prize player.
My nomination for the Rose Sparkus Award is Eilish O'Dowd. And I think the reason I have Eilish O'Dowd is because we had quite a few good rookies on other lines, but we didn't really have any good rookie rucks this year. And Eilish O'Dowd became basically the only player that was acceptable to field in your ruck position other than Mim Strom at the end of the year, mainly because if you couldn't afford Mim Strom, you probably just had to stay with Eilish O'Dowd, which was my case. But she finished with 290s, didn't drop below 60, went all the way up to about 950k, which is a lot of money. She was absolutely sensational this year and a wonderful rookie pick for most players.
She was pretty spectacular. I would say, though, the one thing, there was one other option, it's Matilda Schultz, who sunk the Tamara Smith team. Up until week 9, she'd had like a 4-game stretch where she was averaging basically 100. But I wanted to say that it's another player that's in a line where we had some options, but off a great preseason game that we watched. Mine is Serene Watson as the Rookie of the Year. Was a little bit more expensive as a rookie. She was 412k, I believe. Started off poorly, but then really showed herself to be kind of a nearly premium level defender from that point onwards when she had that 96 against Essendon in week three. So I know that there are some other options here that I also agree with, and they'd already been taken as ones to speak for, but I do want to stand behind Serene Watson as an elite rookie pick.
Look, I agree with both those. I think they're excellent players who I've been happy to have in my team all season. But to me, the best rookie was Maddie Guerin. She was a little bit less highly owned than the other two, but a few things to make her case. Firstly, she by far averaged the most of any rookie price player. I think she ended up with an 87.6 average. She made nearly 800,000K. I mean, that's ending up on 1.1 million is just phenomenal for any rookie price player. And with the exception of, you know, one poor game to start the season, I don't think she went under 60. She went over 100 three times and a couple times in the 90s as well. A phenomenal season. I think also one of those players that if you did have her to start the season, you were flying up the rankings far ahead of anyone else. So the best rookie-priced player that you could have started with in my mind.
Hmm.
I tend to agree. It's unfortunate that not many of us had her. Her ownership throughout the season was quite low. And I think quite a few people probably had her for the Carlton double round. But she was one, if you had started with her and kept her, that would have been fantastic. But unfortunately, I don't think many people did.
This is my case. Like, I agree that she was the best scorer of the rookies this year, rookie price players. But for best rookie, I actually think it's Ailish O'Dowd or Ruby Tripodi, because they showed themselves early in the preseason to have a good role that meant that we could pick them. They showed themselves early in the season to have that same role and to be close or at or around a capable or fieldable score for the first month. And
hey, Liam,
then managed to get close.
Can I add my player? I would like to add in Ruby Tripodi because I think she had a good role in the preseason, a good role at the start of the season, and she had a manageable score that you could really keep all season. There whatsoever. But I think Ruby Tripodi, friend of the pod from our rookie episode last season, she's tackle machine. She broke into a really hard team. We were a bit hesitant that she was going to be able to make a dent at that North Melbourne side, but she did. She confirmed her role in that team and had a huge improvement. Probably one of the lower scorers of these options, but she's my vote. And an honourable mention to Sinead Goody, who came in with huge expectations and performed somewhat well at the start, but then slipped away a little bit. But as you can see, we cannot agree on this one, so we're going to put this out to the polls. I think we've got four, or at least five good options here anyway.
I'm going to put my name behind Ruby Tripodi because I considered trading her out the
list. Liam, for the polls, for the sake of the polls, your name is 100% behind Serene Watson.
Yeah, but that's pish, posh. Like, I wanted to talk about her. Like, I knew that she probably wasn't going to be the best. Just felt wrong to not mention it.
It's nice that we've got one on each line, though. Looking at the Ali Morfitt Break-even breakout award for the player with the best season-to-season improvement. We've got a couple more nominees here. Jono and I seem to have agreed on Mim Strom. A few of the nominees that we considered, we've got Mim Strom, Ash McCarthy, Maddie Gay, Serene Watson, Aisling Maloney, and Emily Marinoff has been chucked in here by Liam. Sure. Jono and I think, are aligned here on Mim Strom, and how could you not, really? What a season.
Yeah, Mim Strom, fantastic season, but Ash McCarthy basically stepping into a new team and filling that Bowers role increased her average by 34 points to go from just being an okay, serviceable midfield option to a genuine premium option. Super impressive. I mean, there's only 2 points of average increase between Strom and McCarthy, but it just goes to show that the Freo engine room was a good place to be if you wanted to have a good year this season. But of those two, both had big increase in average, but there is one player who actually increased their average by a little bit more. And Liam, this is a player that you're definitely a big fan of, as mentioned in the last segment.
Yeah, I think with Serene going up 36 in an average is pretty good. But Ebony Marinoff is the one that I wanted to talk about. because, yeah, all right, she has the lowest of anyone else we've mentioned. She only goes up 19 points on her average. I just don't think it's like, it's almost like, you know, when you're trying to break the land speed record, like every kilometer an hour you go over about 300 kilometers an hour, the air becomes that much more dense. And so you have to put so much more effort into aerodynamics to get it to go that bit faster. The fact that she has gone from the last season highest average of all time, but that was non-adjusted, right? So it was about a 12, 13% increase in the length of games. That 1-2-1 becomes more than the 125, 126 that she ends up doing. The fact that she managed to get to 145 means that her breakout requires such a stupid amount of force that that's why that's my vote for the winner of the Morfitt Award, the Ali Morfitt this year.
Thank you for putting that in such a easy to understand analogy as breaking the land speed barrier. much easier to understand than just Noffy doing well.
It's how we all think about our fantasy.
Forgive me for using some rhetoric flourishes. Outrageous, I know. But yeah, it's just a ridiculous thing that she's managed to do. She's managed to go that much higher than anyone else. And I'd argue that it's that much harder. Is why.
Yeah, so I think both Mel and I put our names behind Mim Strom. And I think this is a phenomenal season for many, many reasons. First, she's the first ruck to ever break 100 points average. I think that's an incredible effort. Mm. She's averaged about, 25 points higher than the highest ruck from last season? Or is it just 15? I'm not good with my maths here. I think it's 25.
We'll go 25. Sounds better.
She's averaged 30 points better than any other ruck of this season as well, which is the important
thing. Which is another exceptional thing as well. So she's gone from one of these, you know, a premium ruck for sure, but, you know, in and amongst the pack to just absolutely flying ahead. And she's done it by improving on basically every stat. She's set records for most amount of hitouts of any ruck this year on a couple occasions. I think she had 48 hitouts, as well as improving her disposal counts. She had 30 in that final game this weekend, and then just tackles everywhere in that contested Freo midfield. So really a phenomenal player, and I don't think we can give her enough credit for the season she's had.
Yeah, going up against like one of the premium rucks in the competition in that finals Bulldog game and breaking her season best performance on disposals, kicks, handballs and clearances and possibly hitouts as well. Just what a excellent performance to show us what she can really be when she has the floor to herself. Hopefully she doesn't get too dampened in a Freo side that has all of its players back next season. But wow, she's really shown us what she can do.
Yeah, I think that the Bowers out, the Stannett out, helped with tackles and probably stopped some clearances. They're experienced players. But then also Onya Tai going down meant that her work ahead of the ball was never threatened. She was the number one marking target.
Well, speaking of Ange Stannett, our next award is the Ange Stannett Silent Simmer Award for the player who quietly became a top-line player over the season. And this is usually someone that we either didn't trade into, didn't keep, didn't talk about that much on the podcast, but has ended up there for their line and not in that many teams. My nominee here has got to be Maddie Gay. We spoke about her briefly in the preseason. I think maybe she was a trade contender for some people during the Bombers double round, but I don't believe her ownership has been that high as she's not been in any of our sides. And she's just kind of, we were a little bit cooling on her and she's come straight back up to finish as the top defender. I mean, this is also because there were a number of defenders falling off around her. It's a bit of a Bradbury there, but I'd say she snuck up on me. What do you guys, who are you guys voting for?
Oh, I was just going to say, she didn't so much snuck up on me. She just got too expensive too quickly and then just stuck it around 950, 960K. But I didn't start with her because I thought that the Bombers would be bad at having a kind of key distributor out from defence. And let's be perfectly honest, we knew Maddie Gay was a midfielder and someone who could play off halfback. I don't think we thought she was this good or she had the kind of quarterbacking perfect mentality that she's managed to show this year. But I love the pick. I think that, yeah, she didn't get enough talk from us in the preseason. I think the rest of the premium defenders at least got, you know, some more discreet chat from us.
Jono, your vote is someone else that I fully agree on. And if it wasn't for Maddie Gay finishing first on her line, I would have gone with your vote here. Who have you got?
Yeah, so, I mean, we talk about not talking about Matty Gay enough. I don't think we could have been more dismissive of Poppy Kelly in the preseason. We were talking about whether it was going to be Montana McKinnon or Gabby Seymour on the ruck. To us, those were the only two options. And, you know, if not for an ACL, it probably would have been Montana McKinnon. But Poppy Kelly has come from a season where I thought last season she was going to get dropped every other game and seemed to this season being a very consistent and very impressive ruck. Her hitouts were very good. Her marking has taken several strides. Her intercept marking in particular was very impressive. I don't think she dropped below 60 all season. A very, very good season to end up as the fourth overall ruck.
The thing that really kills her momentum, well, two things, even after she became the starting ruck when McKinnon went down, is the signing of Tam Luke and then also getting injured for two games early in the season. So she misses week four.
Yeah, week four and the first of week five.
That kills her momentum completely to bring her in and discuss. Like, yeah, she'd put up some really solid scores in those first three and then didn't have a down week. It was just that, yeah, that injury. Tam Luke played relatively well in those two games as well. So it was just like, I think yeah, it's a bit of a silent simmer, but also didn't have like a massive pop score after she came back in, just kind of sat in that 65 to 95 range, just pinging about, playing real well.
She's definitely a simmer because we took her off the pot and put the pot outside. Like, and now that she's actually boiling.
Well,
to keep with the analogy.
Yeah.
I also really like yours here, Liam. And this is someone that I've already put in my black book for next year, which we'll talk a bit more later. Who have you got?
Yeah, it's Keely Sharar. I think she just suffered from... her breakout came midway through the double game week for Carlton. So Abby Mackay gets injured and she goes gangbusters from that point onwards and never really gives back the reins to the midfield, even when Mackay returns. She's shown herself to have a ceiling that I didn't think that she had previously and some consistent floor scores. So I think that probably one of her most impressive efforts was still managing, and I think it was an 87 or a 90 against Brisbane midway through the season. I think that, yeah, she's really managed to blast up the rankings in my mind of fantasy midfielders. And it's just unfortunate that she was not really one we considered. We probably thought that Carlton were going to be bad and a bit congested. I think that some of those things are true. It's just Sharar's shown herself to be better.
Couldn't agree more. Except that I don't, because I'm going with Matty Gay. Well, I'm just laughing at my inability to say things in correct orders. Will, let's hear yours. I like this one. Friend of the pod.
Far out. I have an honourable mention first. I originally had Greta Bodie as my honourable mention, and the reason I've moved from Bodie to the player I have chosen is because Bodie did miss quite a few weeks at the end of that season, but she finished as the fifth highest averaging forward and looked really, really good at the end of the season, so it might be one to stick in your black book for next year. But the one I have picked is Caitlin Gould, friend of the pod. Ended up the third highest averaging forward overall, and I think it's less this one that we didn't necessarily mention her, but I just don't think we ever quite took it as a serious option other than, oh yeah, she's been doing all right. Maybe put her in the team if you need to. But she was just very consistent, scored really, really well, ended the year really, really well. So I think she's a player that was a bit of a quiet fantasy achiever this year.
I think her star probably also shines a little bit brighter because we lost the two best players of the role that she scores well in Onya Tyke and Bonnie Toogood.
Mm.
I think that we kind of look at her as like, not too bad, pretty solid, if those two are uninjured this season. But I agree. It was not one that rated much of a mention at all in the preseason at the very least.
Well, that just about wraps up our awards here, but we do have a special award that we had a bit of attention on last season, and this is the Chantel Emmonson Outside of the Box Award, also known as the 91 Degrees Award, for the defender who scored the most points from kickouts. Liam, do you have some stats here for this one?
Yes, I do. So this award goes to went to Chantel Edmondson each of the last 2 years for being just incredible at always leaving the square when she takes a kick in. However, we got a real conundrum. Chantel Edmondson looked on track to win it for the third year running, all the way up until week 7, when for the first time in 2 years, she actually didn't come out of the goal square when she took a kick in against Richmond. And then she did it two more times later in the season as well, one in round 8 and one in week 10. And there was a bunch of other names that have a bunch of kickouts this year. Chantel Edmondson actually took the most as well. We've got Serene Watson, Charlie Thomas, Beck Miller, Chelsea Bedell, Emily Peace, all who took a stack of kickings this year. None of them had that kind of perfect 100%. Now, we have a fascinating winner this year. And it goes to not Molly Brooksby, because she took 36 kickings and didn't step out of the square on just one of them.
Oof.
The winner is who had 35 of 35, and that is Tilly Lucas-Rod, who wasn't a defender and therefore wasn't in really many of our teams at all. And I was like, oh, it would be amazing if we get a rookie to win this award. Because funnily enough, when we're talking about Black Book players for next year, Brooksby is like right on my radar. But unfortunately, we have to shower more praise on Hawthorn, because Tilly Lucas-Rod is the winner of the Chantel Edmondson this year.
Yeah, and they were going to be my Black Book later on, because as a defender, they look like a really good pick for next year.
Is it Tilly Lucas-Rod is going to be the most expensive defender in the game? I don't know if it's a Black Book if they're
D1.
Already D1. That's
I
like
it's a black it's a black book based on positional change.
It's a secret black book. I'm going to write the answers on the front page, on the front cover, so everyone can see them.
Oh well, that has been our player season awards. We will also be putting these up for polling on socials. So if you disagree with us, or if you've got some honourable mentions or whatever you reckon about this, we're keen to hear. So check out that later on socials in the coming days. Now it's time for the Hosts Awards, where we reflect on what we have done throughout the season. And we just spent about an hour up until now talking about that. So let's see if we can be a bit more pithy with our own reflections. The first one here, the Laura Gardner starting squad success story. I'm going to start. Hosking in round 1 was great. Unfortunately, she didn't stay for me, but that felt like I was off to a winner. But my actual Laura Gardner starting squad success story has to be Riddell. Stayed in my squad the whole time. She finished as a number 3 midfielder. My crystal ball was that she'd finish above Garner. That didn't quite happen. She finished 2 points on average below Garner, but I'll take it. What about you, Jono?
Well, I only had one player out of all of my defenders, forwards and rucks that managed to last the entire season. And that player was Serene Watson, who
great player
was fantastic all season and seemed to get better and better. So very happy with that pick.
Rookie of the year.
Some might say.
Your team.
Yeah, well, if we're talking rookie of the year, my Laura Gardner starting squad success story was Eilish O'Dowd, who was my on-field ruck at the end of the year. I had 3 defenders who finished the end of the year on my team, and none of them were particularly good. So I'm going for Eilish O'Dowd.
The one I'm going to pick is Daisy Darcy. Even though she had some bad scores and ends up with an average of 67, the scores where she didn't score very well, the games where she didn't score very well, she scored a 64 against St Kilda, where she was injured and like looked like she hyperextended her elbow. There was a game in week 3 versus GWS where she sat at fullback and had a massive cast on her wrist, injured for 56. And then she's had another injured bad score for 26 and 52 in weeks 8 and 9. Outside of that, she was a 70s or an 80s player every single game this year.
She had a pretty bad injured score in round 10 of 0.
Well, she's not in my side at that point, so that's fair. But, like, outside of injuries...
Yeah. We just have to ignore all the scores where she didn't do well, yeah. And then she had
exactly.
a
crisis. No, I'm saying from success story, I want to be clear here. I think it was more a case of I had to pick between her or Charlie Thomas, and Daisy Darcy appeared to be the much more risky pick. I fully stand behind her being an amazing scorer this year. It's unfortunate that injuries have made that more difficult, because I truly believe that she had the capability to be a top three or four defender. So that's why I'm standing behind Daisy Darcy and actually using injured scores, not just ones where they're bad. Will,
Tamara Smith, we've got to move on, but I want to make jokes out of you just standing behind Daisy Darcy this whole time. Let's move on to our Ange Foley starting squad for our less than success story. So on the flip side, I am going to start again with EK Smith, who the Suns rookie, who we were very excited about, and especially Jono raving about it, really got me on board there. She had a 23 in round one, then she had a 10, then she was dropped for quite a few games, but she came back because she's not even a reliable VC for a 35 in round six, dropped again for a few more weeks, and then comes back with a 36 in round 10. What a performance. Jono, what do you have to say for this? Who's yours?
I've picked someone that I think a lot of us suffered with, and that was Bonnie Toogood, who had an injured game in round one, a score of 5. And then if we didn't learn that lesson hard enough in round 10, she put up a 4 with another injury. Yeah. I mean, I feel for her, and I don't like giving it to injured players, but that put everyone who started with her just in a bad place. I think she lost so much cash. Mm. It just really put me on the back foot for the rest of the year.
In good news, she was one of, I think, the second most highly owned player. So it put most of the competition behind. So
two-thirds of us suffered. But I think it was
70%. But, Jono, what's the lesson you learned from picking Bonnie Toogood for 2 injuries?
Well, this isn't the lesson learned section. That comes later.
She's like nothing. Okay, fair.
Well, I'm going to give my award then to Kate Lutkins, because I too was on the fence and decided to run with her. And the word from Sophie Conway was she's training up a storm, looking great, and had one really good quarter against Richmond. And that was about the only good football she played this year, because outside of that, she was dropped for every game after some very bad scores in the first 2 weeks.
Yeah, I have an honourable mention to Abby McDonald, who, similar to Kate Lutkins, lots of preseason hype, looked really good in the preseason and then just, again, didn't get the role. It appears that the role that she we were expecting from her has been taken by Rachel Kearns. So, unfortunately,
and Anna Rose.
And Anna Rose Kennedy, so the Irish invasion. So she could end up being a bit of a Laura Gardner if she gets moved on. But the player that I have chosen is an interesting one, because my starting squad less than success story is Lucy Wales, who we will hear a bit about later. But basically, Lucy Wales was a success eventually, just not for me, because I trade her in about an hour before the season started. It ruined my starting team. It meant that I was behind the eight ball to begin with. And then I traded her out after a couple of early season low scores. And then she proceeded to be the second best ruck in the competition for the rest of the year. So the dishonorable mention here is more to me than to Lucy Wales herself, who was a fantastic player. But gee, the decision to bring her into my starting squad at that stage really set me off on the wrong foot.
Yeah, we were going for the sell low, buy high strategy there with Lucy Wales.
It worked fantastic, and it probably cost me that top 3,500 spot, to be honest. Let's.
Oh.
Shocker.
I mean, out of all the shockers that we've had here, I'd just like to little throwback to the Tamara Smith of it all, when I put in Ash McCarthy into our starting squad. And what happened after that, Jono?
I can't remember. I think we might need to go back and listen to it ourselves. Mm.
For our... Oh, you're not going to like this. For M3, can I please have Freo Docker Ash McCarthy?
Ooh.
Yeah, no, you cannot. I'm going to veto that, sorry.
Yeah.
We'll put her in there and then wait till your turn and then you can take her out. Yes, well.
Looks good.
Yep.
We'll leave it there.
Stand by. Oh, boy.
Oh boy, that was not my best call. I could not have been further off the case.
Yes, well, let's go have a look at the Ashradel trade success. So I traded in Schultz for her double round because she was looking really good the week before and Laviki was out. So I was thinking she's got this role to herself, and damn, did she pop? She got, oopsie daisies, I don't have the number in front of me.
Liv Laviki is did definitely help when she missed. Not the backup in The Lion King, Raviki.
Is that what I wrote?
Is the way you pronounced it?
Laviki.
Laviki. Laviki.
Whatever. I think she got a 99 Schultz in week 5, followed by a 79. So I'll take that. Jono, what was yours? Oh, yeah, sure, Jono. I meant to say Liam.
Yeah, so mine was Isla Sheeran. I wanted to bring her in for her double game week in week 5. I was a little bit wary because, as we'll find out a little later, my success bringing in injured players this year has not been particularly good. But from the point I brought her in, she went 78, 78, 91, 74, 117, 93. And then a last round as well. It was a pretty phenomenal, season from Isla Sheeran.
To be fair, yeah. I will take the credit for that last round, given...
Yeah,
yeah. The weeks where she wasn't in Will's team were excellent.
Yeah.
They were phenomenal, yeah. So I was very happy with her.
Yeah, pretty happy with that. And Liam, I think we've already heard about yours from week 10.
Yeah, it's hard to get better than Beck Beeson scoring the second highest score of the round as my trade-in. I had some ones that were fine throughout the season, but a lot of my trade-ins all year were injured. So to have just a nice, easy wrapped parcel in Beck Beeson is handy.
Nice. And Will, I feel like yours gives us some validation from preseason.
It does. I've also realised I've turned into Liam because I keep giving honourable mentions. Because I was choosing between...
Going slowly too.
Yeah, Elise Parker, who was a really good trade-in for the double week. But I've gone for Elizabeth Georgiastathis, trader in round 8, end of the year in the form that we were really hoping to see from the beginning when she scored, was it a 6, an 8? I can't remember what that original one was, but...
It was under 10.
It looked not great, but now we've seen that she can be a fantastic scoring defender. So well done to Lizzie G. I didn't have many other trade successes, though, I'll say that.
And to finish the season on 100, that is 20 times more than you started the season on.
Nice.
What a way to go. I'll take that. Okay, our Abby Dowrick trade debacle, which I just love thinking about this one because it throws back to Liam's massive F up from a few seasons ago. That was just so satisfying to watch.
Yep, 3 seasons ago. I may be not too traumatic to talk about it in spare time.
Unfortunately, none of these rival that yet, so we're still waiting, but we're trying. My Abby Dowrick trade debacle was essentially getting really excited about how I was going in the double rounds, having great success bringing in a rookie that was playing a double round and putting them on my field, and then that all fell apart in round 7 when I traded in Boyle Carr for her double round with Adelaide to get a ridiculously low score. I can't remember what that was. But it also just started a chain reaction for me of having to have multiple low-scoring rookies on field because the cash gen didn't go the way I wanted to. So I put it all down to Boyle Carr, who then had a great week when she was on my bench after that. So she's one I'll never forget. She's almost my Abby Dowrick, if you'll take it. I'll be watching her for many seasons to come, hoping that she does well in her career, but holding her accountable for the disaster of my season 9 fantasy score.
It's good to hold her accountable.
Individually. I'll meet her one day.
I agree with that strategy.
Yeah.
I've actually gone a similar route because I originally was going to talk about the Lucy Wales trade that ruined my season, but that was a pre-season trade. So my in-season trade was
a good one.
This is a good one, and I know Liam loves this one. This was during the double rounds when I was overseas, so I wasn't really, I'm going to say that I wasn't really paying too much attention, but I was looking for some Port Adelaide players to maybe fill in for the double week, and I brought in Alyssa Brooke, which is a name that the season players might know, and I had a lot of injuries and a lot of players being managed this week, so I fielded a donut in my back line and Alyssa Brooke in my back line. And she managed to score me a doubled score Yes, that's two games worth of scoring of 16. She scored a 7 and a 9 for those 2 weeks.
I forgot about this.
And
that's rough.
This is possible. If it wasn't for the fact that everything else in my season basically means that this wasn't as bad as it could have been, this had potential to be an Abby Darrick trade.
Oh, that's yeah. a good one.
She played one other game and she scored a 20. So that's a season average of 12. And unfortunately for you, Will, it was one that we could probably see coming. Because I think she, in the Sandful W as a junior, I think she might have averaged in the high 20s.
I would also like 30s. To say that Alyssa Brooke was in my final team because I couldn't possibly trade her out because she was bottom priced.
I like how Port Adelaide rookies, we've got Sinead Goody, Piper Window, Caitlin Wendland, and you're like, no, no, none of those.
Well, I already had a lot of those
Molly
at that
Brooksby
stage.
Even.
I also brought in Caitlin Pope for that double game week, who scored a 13 in the first game. Thankfully recovered it a bit with a 41, but at that stage I was like, you know what?
Wow.
I've already been in trouble from the trade that is about to be discussed by Jono and Liam, but to follow it up with that in the second round of the bye weeks, that was where I thought, you know what? Maybe this season's not going to be my season.
Well, Jono and Liam, then, you got to go through the elephant in the room.
Yeah, there was one trade that I think killed my season and definitely affected Liam as well.
Oh, it definitely killed my season as well. It was definitely the reason I did so poorly.
our first double week captain of Bree Davey, going from the injured Britt Bonici into Bree Davey, who, coming off a 110, looked like an excellent player. But in her double week, she got injured in the first quarter, the start of the second quarter of yep. the first matchup.
On 35. Ended up,
well, on 33 even.
Oh, sorry.
You take the doubled score of 66 for my captain that week and you compare it to the, 400 points or so that Ali Anderson own has got. It was, I think it killed me entirely. I slipped back 2,000 spots and I couldn't climb my way back out of that.
We were at that game too. And it was just that moment of flatness, just like, well, that's just about does it. That's yep. about as bad as the double game weeks could have gone. The thing that yeah. killed me was like, that was, I think, my fourth injury at that point of the season. Wow. Because I'd gone, who did I have? I had Bonnie Toogood to Casey Sheriff, to then Zali Friswell, who gets injured later. I traded in Britt Bonici, who went to Bree Davey. I had Dizzy Darcy injured a bunch of times. Zali Friswell ended up getting injured. I have a massive... I think my worst trade is just... The trade debacle was just my ability to trade in injured players so frequently. And to top it all off, I had Bonnie. Looked great against Richmond. Traded her in for Kate Hoare. Another injury, but that was one everyone had. And then to get injured again this week, just really... The sting in the tail of a season that was just filled with fits and starts.
Yeah, I think I had all 8 of those as well. Fun times.
Yep. Convenient then that we're moving on to the Bonnie Toogood Award for the best piece of advice given during the season. Mine was that Sheeran was a late out before round one, and I traded her in as soon as she came back, and people were hesitant about time on ground, potential, still nursing an injury, not being back at full speed. But I'm pretty happy with that. She did have a bit of a slow start, but I was glad that I got her in early and didn't waste time mucking around. And that's a pretty low bar for best piece of advice given, because I'm struggling to think of anything that I've said that's been very good.
That's a bit harsh on yourself, Mel. I think you'd find if you went back and listened to everything, there'd be better.
On account of me not
but
doing
it was
that,
good advice.
This is what you get.
Definitely a worthwhile player, though. I mean, that ended up being my best trade-in, so I appreciate that advice. For mine, it was probably talking about Lucy Wales, because I knew at the start of the season it was 3 rough matchups, and then she was going to go bang from that point forward, and she really did. She went, 3 of the next 4 games were over 100, and the other was just shy. Ended up the second best ruck. I wish that I had held all the way through. I didn't take my own advice. But, yeah, probably the one that I'm happiest with.
I have written down on the run sheet Ariana Hetherington for her 75, I think, in the second game of the double weeks. Just one I will go to my grave with is just one of the happiest things I've ever been. 72 after scoring a 42 in the first game against Geelong. But the actual best advice I gave is when we did the Sweet 16, upon Will's return, there were two players I mentioned as being rough to miss out on top five defenders, and that was Matty Gay and Gabby Newton, who I would say have been excellent in that time. So I think those Indeed. Are the players to target at that point, and probably were sitting a little bit outside of top five rankings at that point, but writing was on the wall, and so I'm pretty happy with that one.
I like it, but we've got to give a shout out here to Will.
Yeah, this one, I think we're going to have to go back to the audio for this one, because while it doesn't quite meet the same category of good as a Matty Gay or a Gab Newton one, it did provide us with arguably our most memeable moment of the season, and that's me deciding that Tamara Smith was a viable defender. And to use Liam's logic of taking out scores in the teens, she's averaged 64 without those two dud games. So, superstar.
What about those scores where she wasn't, all the scores where she wasn't injured? Do we want to do them?
Yep, and when she, you take out all the scores she wasn't injured, she actually averaged 115.
Amazing.
Amazing, but yes, I really struggled to think of good advice similar to Mel, but I was pretty happy with this one, especially because it gave us the Liam reaction. What a wonderful moment for the season. So I'm going to pick a very alternative one, I think. Just because I think it's going to really be quite an interesting one. I'm going to pick Tamara Smith from the Hawks.
Ooh.
That is a unique choice.
And I'm so glad we are having a video on this stream, because Liam was flabbergasted.
No, you got to explain this to Liam. Why are you going Tamara Smith?
I personally prefer the mystery. I really like what I saw from the Hawks in the practice games. They had a very kick-mark game style in the back line. Both Tamara Smith and Tilly Lucas-Rodd were doing a lot of kick marking back there, and Tamara Smith looked really comfortable as an interceptor. So I think there is a good 10 points worth of upside there for Tamara Smith.
I hate this pick, because this is probably the kicking action that makes me the most uncomfortable every time I watch it. I do not like Tamara Smith playing in a role where that she kicks all the time.
I am so happy with this pick.
So unpleasant.
What about you suggesting Sarah Lacaille last week?
Yeah.
Only to end up as what, the second highest?
I mean, I'm pretty like happy with that one as well.
The final question we have here is for the AFLW Fantasy Coach of the Year. And the reason we have this as a award is because last season, Liam would not shut up about the coaches he didn't like. And I said, we have to even this out with a coach that you do like. You have to dig in there into your heart and say something nice about a coach. So we're just going with the positive option here, which is the Coach of the Year. And I am going to start with Jono.
I think it has to be Lisa Webb. We were talking about Fremantle at the start of the year. We had no idea what was going on. And we were basically saying, we don't think anyone's going to be particularly relevant. But we had, Gabby Newton in defense, Ash McCarthy in the midfield, Mim Strom in the ruck, all of whom would have been phenomenal options. And then, you know, there were periods where Gabby O'Sullivan was a very important forward to have.
Solid.
So, you know, I think there is very few teams that can say they were as relevant on every line as Freo in the end.
Can I make a couple of statements in response?
No. Moving
on. Look, firstly, her injury reporting, Fremantle's injury reporting, dreadful. Because Hayley Miller missed 2 weeks in a row, late out calf. Gabby O'Sullivan has been nursing injuries quite evidently that have not been announced. And I would say that those two players and their roles have made it very difficult, particularly for forward options, to pick each year. That's the, I don't disagree with the rest of with what you said. I just think that particularly the injury shenanigans, that needs to be, I'm marking them down for that. That's not good enough.
So who are you putting?
You name me a team, I'll show you injury North reporting Melbourne. That is less than acceptable.
North Melbourne. And that's my vote. It's Dan Crocker. I'd say he has yet again managed the most efficiently time on ground midfield in the competition. They've had multiple they've had Alice O'Loughlin as a forward. I would say that Emma Carney was on track to be, you know, in and around top five before she busted a hamstring. We talked this entire season about how we were concerned about managed time on ground for different players, particularly Jazz Garner and Ash Riddell, and they put up some of their highest scores in the double game week. So it's the second year in a row, I think it's Crocker. I'm standing by it this year.
Well, I'm going to sandwich that with another vote for Lisa Webb, which I didn't want to go first because then I didn't want to look like I was just voting for my own club. To add a different lens to the same argument is that we were worried that because they had so many utility players that they were just going to get thrown around and we were never going to know where they were going to play. That is still true. Newton and O'Sullivan as well, both playing kind of wherever they're needed each game, really varied a lot there. But it did result in some good fantasy scores because they were always on the ground. I think that was injury affected. I'd love to see how they go with a strong, versatile utility team next season when you've got some of those core cogs back. Lisa Webb, despite having the two big names of the club out, still managed to put up a number of fantasy-relevant players for us. And you've got to love to see that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Well, I was going to say Cam Bernasconi from GWS, but I don't want Liam's head to explode. The answer I have gone with is actually Daniel Webster, who I think is the coach of the year just for getting Hawthorn into that top two position.
Just for managing to eke out this meagre, small, very sad club to finals.
Yeah, exactly. They've always been perennial strugglers, Rude. Hawthorn. But, yeah.
Just the way you phrased it, like, oh, for managing to get this club to top two, it's like, oh, wow, well, you thought they were that terrible.
And they were so the bad that we just didn't want anything to... No, but basically I think that he's got a whole lot of players playing really good football and really good fantasy-relevant football. They move the ball really well. They kick mark. I mean, he made Tamara Smith a viable defender in fantasy. I think I can't really go much past that, to be honest. I think that's my takeaway.
It's a fairly compelling argument. Even if they haven't had a top liner outside of maybe Lucy Wales.
Well, I'm glad someone said Hawthorn because I was surprised when Jono went with Frio there for the AFLW Fantasy Coach of the Year. So good to get some Hawks representation in every question. Well, that's it for our Hosts Awards. The last thing we've got here is a very quick wrap-up of our takeaways from the season. Best principal and one black book player, Liam.
Oh, this season is bloody tough for principals. I love that you've also thrown to me, and I was really hoping, because I hadn't written anything down, you might throw to me last. But the principle that I'm probably going to take away is trust your gut in the first 2 or 3 weeks when it looks like a spike roll with goals. Jess Hosking is the one for me for that one. And in terms of my black book player, I would say I've already given... Molly Brooksby is one, so I'll say Amy Gaylor is the other. As a defender, I think she's got supreme potential. She's an incredible kick.
Nice. That was one I was actually excited for when Bonnie Toogood went out because I was like, oh, is she going to move up forward and get some goals there? Maybe a bit early, but I like it for next year. Will.
Yeah, my main principle is don't mess with your starting setup. Mel said it best earlier in the episode when she said make a good starting squad and don't change it. I think that's probably something I need to do going forward, which is just make a team and not do any trades. My black book player for next year already was one of the better players on their line, but Charlie Mullins finished the year really, really well for Brisbane. If she keeps forward status, I think she has a very good chance to move into the top position as a forward, so one to keep an eye on.
Yep, I like it. Jono's mentioned it before as well. For me, my principal, I've said it a few different ways of varying aggressiveness throughout the season, but it is, once you select a premium player in your side, do not mess around with them unnecessarily, which I definitely learnt from in the double weeks doing too many primo trades. And for my black book player, I reckon it's Shira. I'm excited that she could be a M2, M3 potential to set and forget next season. I think she's shown a great jump this season and I'm looking forward to what she can bring there.
And I'm looking forward to hopefully being able to pick premiums and not needing to worry about double game weeks. That's
I mean,
philosophy.
That's the real, yeah. Oof. Like, can we not do that again?
We hope and pray.
Jono.
Mine is probably more to do with players returning from injury. There's a lot of occasions this season where I was bringing in players where they had missed a couple games before. And I just need to give people more time to find their feet again, because I started with players like Kez Peterson, who had missed the practice games and came in clearly underdone and had injuries recurring for the whole season. I brought in Georgie Prasparkas a little bit too early and didn't need to do that. Same with Bonnie Toogood. I brought her in, even whilst giving out advice that you shouldn't bring her in because I needed someone cheap and I knew that she would eventually come good. And I just copped a lot of poor scores in the meantime. So I think that's going to be my takeaway for next season. And then with my Black Book players, I'm going to immediately go back on that and talk about a player that dealt with injury this year, and that was Amy McDonald. I think she is going to be something very, very cheap next season, and I'm very excited to see what she can deliver when she's fit and firing again.
I like it.
Yep.
Going to win the W Award next year after not winning it this year for me.
So average of 72. This is a 90-plus player. But also the easiest Black Book player we've got is Bonnie Toogood, given she's going to be, I think, if it's the same prices as this year, I think she's going to be priced in the high, in the low 400s.
Well, we are clearly just can't wait to start talking about more fantasy for next season. Thank you to all of our listeners that have stuck with us for this season as we have two different streams and have, you know, become the official AFLW Fantasy podcast. While also keeping up a lot of our content and moving to YouTube. It's been a big season for us. But yeah, thank you for everyone that's come along for the ride. Yeah, it's made it a very enjoyable season. In terms of what's next coming from us, we'll be chucking up some of the polls on our socials as well as potentially running a bit of a survey for feedback for this season.
Yeah, that's generally the plan. I'm going to be having a conversation with, hopefully, with the people that run the platform. Hopefully we can get some kind of feedback from players from this season and from myself and Jono specifically. Thanks to everyone who's been hopefully reading and enjoying our articles that we've been writing so far. They were a pleasure to write. Not so much when we have double game week, so abiding philosophy again. No more doubles. Never.
Never again. Well, we leave it with that. So for one last whip around, in case we're posting anything in the off-season, where can they find you, Liam?
They can find me on Twitter at LiamAFLWFantasy, lamenting poor Bubbles Finals performances.
You can find me on Twitter at FreeKickJono.
You can find me at FreeKickWill.
And I am FreeKickMel, and I may be on Twitter getting very excited if Flag Mantle happens this season. Chat to you more next season. Thanks, team. Bye.
See ya.
Bye.